Thank you for listening to a reading presented by the Poetry Center of Chicago. The Poetry Center is an independent, nonprofit arts organization promoting poetry in Chicago through readings, workshops, and arts education. To learn more about the Poetry Center, to read poems by our students in Chicago Public Schools, or to donate, please visit www.poetrycenter.org.
Czesław Miłosz was born to Polish-speaking parents in a small town near Vilno in Lithuania in 1911. He has written, "If asked where my poetry has come from, I would say its roots are in my childhood, in Christmas carols, and in the Marian and Vesper offices. Added to these, of course, are the events later in this century, a century which he's called, and rightly so, evil and base, which lend some of his writing a strong skepticism and a stinging scorn. He lived through the Second World War in Warsaw, getting along the best way he could. He wrote for the Polish Underground, edited an anthology of anti-Nazi poems called Invincible Song, and he translated Shakespeare and Eliot. After the war, he joined the Polish diplomatic service and served from 46 to 49 in Washington as cultural attaché. In 51, he broke with the Polish government and went into self-exile in Paris. There he lived as a freelancer and published the political essays of The Captive Mind and the autobiographical work Issa Valley and Native Realm, A Search for Self-Definition, and, of course, poetry. To some degree, his defection grew out of his resolve to write a poetry that would fuse personal with historical themes, a poetry that would be neither pure nor the poetry of the propagandistic sort approved of by the socialist governments. In 1960, he came to the United States to teach Slavic literature at the University of California in Berkeley, where he has been ever since. He is a professor of Slavic literature and languages. In his years in the United States, he has continued to add to a body of work that is notable for its fecundity, its great imaginative range, and its wisdom. And he comes to us after spending approximately a month in Poland. I believe it was for the first time in something like 8 years that he had been back to Poland. He was there to give lectures at the Jagiellonian University in Krakow on poetry, and he was awarded an honorary degree there. It is a great honor for me to present to you Czesław Miłosz.
I must say that I'm going to read my poetry in English translation, some maybe in the original for the sound. I start with a quotation from Auden. He says, "Poetry can do 101 things, delight, sadden, disturb, amuse, instruct. It may express every possible shade of emotion and describe every conceivable kind of event. But there is only one thing that all poetry must do. It must praise all it can for being and for happening." This quotation read in the 20th century in circumstances which existed in Europe during the war especially, sounds paradoxical, and I should say praising all poetry can is a goal, but how to do it? I would begin with a poem entitled Lecture Number 4. I have written 6 lectures in verse, half jokingly imitating 6 lectures in prose which I gave at Harvard. Lecture 4. Reality, what can we do with it? Where is it in words? Just as it flickers, it vanishes. Innumerable lives unremembered. Cities on maps only, without that face in the window on the first floor by the market, without those two in the bushes near the gas plant. Returning seasons, mountains, snows, oceans, and the blue ball of the earth rotates, but silent are they who run through artillery fire, who clung to a lump of clay for protection, and those deported from their homes at dawn, and those who have crawled out from under a pile of bodies. While here I, an instructor in forgetting, teach that pain passes, for it's the pain of others. Still in my mind, trying to save Miss Jadwiga, a little hunchback, librarian by profession, who perished in the shelter of an apartment house that was considered safe but toppled down, and no one was able to dig through the slabs of wall, though knocking and voices were heard for many days. So a name is lost for ages, forever. No one will ever know about her last hours. Time carries her in layers of the Pliocene. The true enemy of man is generalization. The true enemy of man, so-called history, attracts and terrifies with its plural number. Don't believe it, cunning and treacherous. History is not, as Marx told us, anti-nature, and if a goddess, a goddess of blind fate. The little skeleton of Miss Jadwiga, the spot where her heart was pulsating, this only I set against necessity, law, theory. Approaching reality sometimes can be possible only through a bias, irony. I have written in 1944 a song on the end of the world, which is really a song. I am going to read first stanza in Polish. W dzień końca świata pszczoła krąży nad kwiatem nasturcji, rybak naprawia błyszczącą sieć, skaczą w morzu wesołe delfiny, młode wróble czepiają się rynny i wąż ma złotą skórę, jak powinien mieć. And in English, this is a poem about the end of the world. For many people at that moment, the world ended. And that was a sort of an attempt on my part to convince, to distance myself and to convince that whether people die or not, the world will continue. On the day the world ends, a bee circles a clover, a fisherman mends a glimmering net, happy porpoises jump in the sea, by the rain spout young sparrows are playing, and the snake is gold-skinned, as it should always be. On the day the world ends, women walk through the fields under their umbrellas. A drunkard grows sleepy at the edge of a lawn. Vegetable peddlers shout in the street. And a yellow-sailed boat comes nearer the island. The voice of a violin lasts in the air and leads into a starry night. And those who expected lightning and thunder are disappointed. And those who expected signs and archangels' drums do not believe it is happening now. As long as the sun and the moon are above, as long as the bumblebee visits a rose, as long as rosy infants are born, no one believes it is happening now. Only a white-haired old man, who would be a prophet, yet is not a prophet, for he's much too busy, repeats while he binds his tomatoes. There will be no other end of the world. There will be no other end of the world. Of course, many of my poems are dedicated to time, a great mystery of time. Many years ago, in 1936, I was a very young man then, I wrote a poem entitled Encounter. We were riding through frozen fields in a wagon at dawn. A red wing rose in the darkness. and suddenly a hare ran across the road. One of us pointed to it with his hand. That was long ago. Today neither of them is alive, not the hare nor the man who made the gesture. Oh, my love, where are they? Where are they going? The flash of a hand, streak of movement, rustle of pebbles, I ask not out of sorrow, but in wonder. Or another poem about passing of time. As a young man, I was an apprentice in poetry in Paris, then capital of the world. And many years later, I wrote the following poem, returning to Paris after many years. By passing Rue Descartes. By passing Rue Descartes, I descended towards the Seine, shy, a traveler, a young barbarian, just come to the capital of the world. We were many, from Jassy and Koloshvar, Vilno and Bucharest, Saigon and Marrakesh, ashamed to remember the customs of our homes, about which nobody here should ever be told. The clapping for servants, barefooted girls hurry in, dividing food with incantations, choral prayers recited by master and household together. I had left the cloudy provinces behind. I entered the universal, dazzled and desiring. Soon enough, many from Jassy and Koloshvar or Saigon or Marrakesh would be killed because they wanted to abolish the customs of their homes. Soon enough, their peers were seizing power in order to kill in the name of the universal, beautiful ideas. Meanwhile, the city behaved in accordance with its nature, rustling with throaty laughter in the dark, baking long breads and pouring wine into clay pitchers, buying fish, lemons, and garlic at street markets, indifferent as it was to honor and shame and greatness and glory, because that had been done already and had transformed itself into monuments representing nobody knows whom, into arias hardly audible, and into turns of speech. Again I lean on the rough granite of the embankment, as if I had returned from travels through the underworlds, and suddenly saw in the light the reeling wheel of the seasons, where empires have fallen and those once living are now dead. There is no capital of the world, neither here nor anywhere else, and the abolished customs are restored to their small fame. And now I know that the time of human generations is not like the time of the earth. As to my heavy sins, I remember one most vividly. How, one day, walking on a forest path along a stream, I pushed a rock down onto a water snake caught in the grass. And what I have met with in life was the just punishment, which reaches, sooner or later, the breaker of a taboo. I was brought up in Lithuania, and Lithuania was the last country in Europe to adopt Christianity, and there was a cult of animals, pagan cult, and the water snake was considered a sacred animal. Now, about time, there is a poem written not long ago in California, about Californian winter. The pungent smells of a California winter, grayness and rosiness, an almost transparent full moon. I add logs to the fire, I drink and I ponder. In Ilava, the news item said, at age 70, died Alexander Imkevich, poet. He was the youngest of our group. I patronized him slightly. just as I patronized others for their inferior minds, though they had many virtues I couldn't touch. And so I'm here, approaching the end of the century and of my life, proud of my strength, yet embarrassed by the clearness of the view. Avant-gardes mixed with blood, the ashes of inconceivable arts, an omnium gatherum of chaos. I pass judgment on that, though marked myself. This hasn't been the age for the righteous and the decent. I know what it means to beget monsters and to recognize in them myself. You, moon, you, Alexander, fire of cedar logs, water close over us, a name lasts but an instant. Not important whether the generations hold us in memory. Great was that chase with the hounds for the unattainable meaning of the world. And now I am ready to keep running. When the sun rises beyond the borderlands of death, I already see mountain ridges in the heavenly forest, where beyond every essence, a new essence waits. You, music of my late years, I am called by a sound and a color which are more and more perfect. Do not die out, fire. Enter my dreams, love. Be young forever, seasons of the earth. And a very, very short poem on a similar subject entitled My-ness, from my. My parents, my husband, my brother, my sister. I am listening in a cafeteria at breakfast. The women's voices rustle, fulfill themselves in a ritual, no doubt necessary. I glance sidelong at their moving lips, and I delight in being here on earth for one more moment with them here on earth to celebrate our tiny, tiny mindness. I have written a number of love poems, but practically never to a woman mentioned by name, and even without any allusions to concrete women in my life. Here is a short poem in prose entitled Esse. The action takes place in the Parisian metro, and the poem describes a love affair which lasted 1 minute and a half. I looked at that face dumbfounded. The lights of metro stations flew by. I didn't notice them. What can be done if our sight lacks absolute power to devour objects ecstatically in an instant, leaving nothing more than the void of an ideal form, a sign like a hieroglyph simplified from the drawing of an animal or bird? A slightly snub nose, a high brow with slickly brushed back hair, the line of the chin. But why isn't the power of sight absolute? And in a whiteness tinged with pink, two sculpted holes containing a dark, lustrous lava. To absorb that face, but to have it simultaneously against the background of all spring boughs, walls, waves, in its whipping, its laughter, moving it back 15 years, or ahead 30, to have. It is not even a desire, like a butterfly, a fish, the stem of a plant, only more mysterious. And so it befell me that after so many attempts at naming the world, I am able only to repeat, harping on one string, the highest, the unique vowel, beyond which no power can attain. I am, she is, shout, blow the trumpets, make thousand strong marches, leap, rend your clothing, repeating only, ease. She got out at Raspai. I was left behind with the immensity of existing things. A sponge, suffering because it cannot saturate itself. A river, suffering because reflections of clouds and trees are not clouds and trees. A peculiar occupation of mine here in America is to translate together with my friends' American poems, my poetry, into English. Sometimes, however, they act on their own, and I'm going to read a couple of poems in their translation of Robert Haas and Robert Pinsky. Very difficult to translate because those are short elegies or madrigals with stanza based upon with construction based upon stanza and rhymes and so on. To give you the idea, I would read in Polish one or two stanzas. Litość i zrozumienie wysokiej mamy cenie, no bo co? Pycha ciała i sława, pocałunki i brawa, komu to? Medykowie, prawnicy, oficerowie śliczni w czarnej jamie, futra, rzęsy, obrączki, ukłony w słońcu pomszy, odpoczywanie, dobranoc, piersi parzyste, śnijcie sny wiekuiste, bez pająków. Understanding and pity, we value them highly, what else? Beauty and kisses, fame and its prizes, who cares? Doctors and lawyers, well turned out majors, 6 feet of earth, rings, furs and lashes, glances at masses, rest in peace. Sweet twin breasts, good night, sleep through to the light, without spiders. And another poem, also difficult to translate, is every stanza has 3 lines and 3 rhymes. Kiedy żalu się pozbyłem i chwały, którą goniłem, tego, czym nigdy nie byłem, nad kraje, góry, zatoki, niosły mnie gryfy i smoki, przypadki albo wyroki. When I got rid of grieving and the glory I was seeking, which I had no business doing, I was carried by dragons over countries, bays and mountains, by fate or by what happens. Oh yes, I wanted to be me. I tossed at mirrors whippily and learned my own stupidity. From nails, mucous membrane, lungs, liver, bowels and spleen, whose house is made? Mine. So what else is new? I am not my own friend. Time cuts me in two. Monuments covered with snow, accept my gift. I wondered, and where? I don't know. Sometimes my co-translators are unable to cope with structure, metrical and structure and rhymes, and I am forced to translate myself. And here is a poem, Poet at 70, which runs in Polish. I am going to read the two first stanzas. Ty żeś to, bracie teologu, znawco niebiosów i otchłani, spodziewający się co roku, kiedyś tęczałeś nad księgami, że dotkniesz ostatniego progu. Zaiste, bardzoś poniżony, splendor myśleniu jest odjęty, zeszedłeś między ludzkie domy i odpływają jak okręty, a celi port ich niewiadomy. Thus, brother theologian, here you are, connoisseur of heavens and abysses, year after year perfecting your art, choosing bookish wisdom for your mistress, only to discover you wander in the dark. I, humiliated to the bone by tricks that crafty reason plays, you search for peace in human homes, but they, like sailboats, glide away, their goal and port, alas, unknown. You sit in taverns drinking wine, pleased by the hubbub and the din, voices grow loud and then decline, as if played out by a machine, and you accept your quarantine. On this sad earth, no time to grieve. Love potions every spring are brewing. Your heart in magic finds relief. The Lenten dirges cut your cooing. And thus you learn how to forgive. Voracious, frivolous, and dazed, as if your time were without end, you run around and loudly praise the atrium where the flesh pretends to win the game of nights and days. In plumes and scales to fly and crawl, put on mascara, fluffy dresses, attempt to play like beast and fall, forgetting interstellar spaces. Try, my philosopher, this world. And all your wisdom came to nothing. Though many years you worked and strived, with only one reward and trophy, your happiness to be alive, and sorrow that your life is closing. Oh, I forgot to read a poem, some love poems, which I like. Mary Magdalene and I. The seven unclean spirits of Mary Magdalene, chased from her by the teacher with his prayer, hover in the air in a bat-like flight, while she, with one leg folded in, another bent at the knee, sits staring hard at her toe and the thong of her sandal, as if she had just noticed such an odd thing. Her chestnut brown hair curls in rings and covers her back, strong, almost viril, resting on her shoulder on a dark blue dress under which her nakedness phosphoresces. The face is heavyish, the neck harboring a voice that is low, husky, as if hoarse. But she will say nothing. Forever between the element of flesh and the element of hope, she stays still. At the canvas corner, the name of a painter who desired her. So that painter is myself, of course. In the last period of my life, I write poems which are much lighter, and several I'm going to read. For instance, In a Jar. Explanation is that when I was a schoolboy, I got plenty of animals in my at home. I wanted to be a naturalist, and I had in a jar newts. Many years later, I wrote that poem about my aquarium. Now, with all my knowledge, honorable newts, I approach the jar in which you live and see how you float up vertically to the surface, showing your bellies of vermilion color of flame that makes you akin to the alchemist salamander living in fire. Perhaps that's the reason why I caught you in a pond between pines when white April clouds race and carried you to town, proud of my trophy. You vanished so long ago. I ponder the moment when you lived unaware of hours and years. I address you. I give you existence, even a name and a title in the princedom of grammar, to protect you by inflection from nothingness. Myself, no doubt, held by powers who observe me and transfer me to some grammatical hyperform, while I wait with the hope that they seize me and carry me up, so that I last like an alchemist salamander in fire. I have a poem, Confession, which is somewhat different from confessional poetry, in spite of its title. But undoubtedly, this is a confession. My Lord, I loved strawberry jam and the dark sweetness of a woman's body, also well-chilled vodka, herring in olive oil, scents of cinnamon, of cloves. So what kind of prophet am I? Why should the spirit have visited such a man? Many others were justly called and trustworthy. Who would have trusted me? For they saw how I empty glasses, throw myself on food, and glance greedily at the waitress' neck, flawed and aware of it, desiring greatness, able to recognize greatness wherever it is, and yet not quite, only in part, clairvoyant. I knew what was left for smaller men like me. A feast of brief hopes, a rally, a tournament of hunchbacks, literature. And books. This poem about books, curiously enough, has been chosen by, I don't know what society in Great Britain, dedicated to promoting poetry, and placed in the London Underground. I had reports from friends of mine who suddenly saw that poem on the wall in the London Underground. And yet the books. And yet the books will be there on the shelves, separate beings that appeared once, still wet, as shining chestnuts under a tree in autumn, and touched, coddled, began to live in spite of fires on the horizon, castles blown up, tribes on the march, planets in motion. We are, they said, even as their pages were being torn out, or a buzzing flame licked away their letters. So much more durable than we are, whose frail warmth cools down with memory, disperses, perishes. I imagine the earth when I am no more. Nothing happens, no loss. It's still a strange pageant, women's dresses, dewy lilacs, a song in the valley. Yet the books will be there on the shelves, well-born, derived from people, but also from radiance, heights. Now I'm going to read one of my recent poems entitled Creating the World. Celestials at the board of projects burst into laughter. For one of them has designed a hedgehog, another, not to be left behind, a soprano. Eyelashes, a bust, and ringlets, plenty of ringlets. It is superb fun in the ocean of seething energy, among bursts and clacks announcing electric currents. Buckets of protocolors gurgle, protobrushes labor, a mighty whirl at almost galaxies beyond nearly windows, and pure radiance that has never experienced clouds. They blow conscious somersault in protospace in the realm of archetypes, the seventh heaven. The earth is practically ready. Its rivers sparkle, forests cover it, and every single creature waits for its name. Thunder strolls the horizon, but the herds in the grass do not lift their heads. Towns come to be, narrow streets, a chamber pot poured out a window, laundry, and immediately freeways to the airport, a monument at crossroads, a park, a stadium, for thousands when they get up and roar, goal. To invent length, width, height, 2 times 2, and the force of gravity, would be quite enough. But on top of it, panties with lace, a hippopotamus, the beak of a toucan, a chastity belt with its terrible teeth, a hammerhead shark, an infantry helmet, plus time, that is a division into was and will be. Gloria, Gloria, sing objects call to being. Hearing them, Mozart sits down at the pianoforte and composes music which had been ready before he himself was born in Salzburg. If only it all could last, but no way. It iridesces, passes, turns inside a soap bubble, together with an invocation, celestials addressed to the mortals. Oh, dizzy tribe, how not to look at you with pity? Your bright rags, your dances, seemingly profligate, but in truth pathetic, mirrors in which you leave a face with earrings, painted eyelids, eyelashes with mascara. Oh, to have so little, nothing except fists of love. How feeble your defense against the abyss. And the sun rises, and the sun sets, and the sun rises, and the sun sets, while they go on running, running. The thistle, the nettle, the burdock, the belladonna have a future. Theirs are wastelands and rusty railroad tracks, the sky, silence. Who shall I be for men many generations later, when after the noise of languages, the award goes to silence? I was to be redeemed by the gift of arranging words, but must be prepared for an earth without grammar. For the thistle, the nettle, the burdock, the belladonna, and a small wind above them, a sleepy cloud, silence. Dante. To be so poor, no heaven, no abyss, a revolving wheel of seasons. Humans under the stars walk and disintegrate into ash or a stellar dust. Molecular machines work faultlessly, self-propelled. Lilium columbianum opens tiger-striped flowers, and in an instant they shrink into a sticky pulp. Trees grow up, straight up in the air. O alchemist Alighieri, how distant from your harmony is that crazy sequence, that cosmos at which I wander and in which I vanish, not knowing anything about immortal soul, my eyes riveted to unpopulated screens. Colorful slippers, ribbons, rings are sold as always on the bridge at Arno. I choose a gift for Theodora, Elvire, or Julia, whatever the name of her with whom I sleep and play chess. In a bathroom, sitting at the edge of a tub, I look at her, fleshed color in greenish water, not at her, at nakedness, abstraction, which makes our bodies not our own. Ideas, words, emotions abandon us, as if our ancestors were a different species. It's more and more difficult to compose love songs, wedding canzonas, a solemn music. And only as once for you, this remains real. La concreata e perpetua sete, the inborn and perpetual desire del deiformo regno for a god like domain, a realm or a kingdom. There is my home. I cannot help it. I pray for light, for the inside of the eternal pearl, l'eterna Margarita. I have written all my poems in one language, language of my childhood, with the exception of one poem, to Raja Rao, because I have known Raja Rao for many years, first in Paris, and then I met him in Austin, Texas, where he teaches part of the year. That was besides before Raja Rao received the Neustadt Literary Prize for his novel. But Raja Rao wanted to convince me that Greek philosophy and Indian religion and philosophy are one, and tried to convert me to his Brahman religion, which was not very, he was not very successful. And I wrote this poem as a letter to him after I returned to Berkeley. Raja, I wish I knew the cause of that malady. For years I couldn't accept the place I was in. I felt I should be somewhere else. A city, trees, human voices lack the quality of presence. I would live by the hope of moving on. Somewhere else there was a city of real presence, of real trees and voices and friendship and love. Link, if you wish, my peculiar case on the border of schizophrenia to the messianic hope of my civilization. Ill at ease in the tyranny, ill at ease in the republic, in the one I longed for freedom, in the other for the end of corruption, building in my mind a permanent polis, forever deprived of aimless bustle. I learned at last to say, this is my home. Here, before the glowing call of ocean sunsets, on the shore which faces the shores of your Asia, in a great republic, moderately corrupt. Raja, this didn't cure me of my guilt and shame, a shame of failing to be what I should have been. The image of myself grows gigantic on the wall, and against it, my miserable shadow. That's how I came to believe in original sin, which is nothing but the first victory of the ego. Tormented by my ego, deluded by it, I give you, as you see, a ready argument. I hear you saying that liberation is possible and that Socratic wisdom is identical with your gurus. No, Raja. I must start from what I am. I am those monsters which visit my dreams and reveal to me my hidden essence. If I am sick, there is no proof whatsoever that man is a healthy creature. Greece had to lose her pure consciousness, had to make our agony only more acute. We needed God loving us in our weakness and not in the glory of beatitude. No help, Raja, my part is agony, struggle, abjection, self-love and self-hate, prayer for the kingdom and reading Pascal. My time is drawing to a close, so I should, I imagine, finish with my reading. Proof. And yet you experience the flames of hell. You can even say what they are like, real, ending in sharp hooks so that they tear up flesh piece by piece to the bone. You walked in the street and it was going on, the lashing and bleeding. You remember, therefore you have no doubt, there is a hell for certain. And to counteract this pessimistic poem, pure beauty, benediction, you are all I gathered from a life that was bitter and confused, in which I learned about evil, my own and not my own. Wonder kept seizing me, and I recall only wonder. risings of the sun, over endless green, a universe of grasses and flowers opening to the first light, blue outline of the mountain and the Hosanna shout. I asked, how many times is this the truth of the earth? How can laments and curses be turned into hymns? What makes you need to pretend when you know better? But the lips praised on their own the feet ran, the heart beat strongly, and the tongue proclaimed its adoration. Thank you. Thank you.